Hello everyone and welcome to Science Spinning, the show with an Irish spin on science with me, Sean Duke, here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Now cars, of course, are becoming more intelligent all the time, and with our GPS systems for navigation and sensors to help with parking and provide information on temperature and fuel consumption, etc., cars are certainly getting very much more intelligent. But how intelligent can they become in future? The answer to that question, well, I'll be talking to Edward Jones of the Car Research Group at NUI Galway, a group which, as the name suggests, is doing research into the development of intelligent and much safer cars. In the second half of the show, meanwhile, I'll be discussing the health or otherwise of Ireland's mammal population. The mammals in Ireland are facing a number of pressure points, and in order to get more information on the distribution of our 67 mammal species, a new initiative has been launched. I'll be talking to Liam Lycett. He's the director of the National Biodiversity Data Centre in Waterford. But first up, I'm going to be talking about intelligent cars. I'm delighted now to welcome Dr. Edward Jones of the Car Research Group based at NUI Galway. So hopefully I have Edward on the line. Hello, Edward.
Hello, Sean.
How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First of all, maybe tell us about your Car Research Group. That's the Connacht Automotive Research Group at NUI Galway. What is it, and what's your main goals?
Okay, the Car Group is a specialist research group within electrical and electronic engineering at NUI Galway, which is part of the College of Engineering. And basically we're concerned with the development of systems mainly for driver assistance. The particular technologies that we use are heavily based on signal processing and image processing. So what we're trying to do is develop technologies within the lab with the goal to eventually deploying them in cars, and a particular focus of that is driver assistance for safety, for enhanced safety.
Okay, so safety is a big thing. I see that you've signed an agreement, a research agreement with a company called Valeo, is that the right pronunciation? Vision Systems. So they're into automotive vision systems, and one of the goals apparently in this release I'm looking at is to help drivers see blind spots around corners, etc. So how will that work?
That's correct, yeah. We've had a long relationship with Valeo Vision Systems in Tuam, and they were previously Connacht Electronics Limited. And their primary focus at the moment is in developing camera systems for cars. Now, I suppose the use of cameras in cars is becoming much more common. I suppose a lot of people would probably have cars where you've got a rear-facing camera that will help with reversing assistance so you don't accidentally drive over a child and so on. But given that there's a kind of an increase in the use of cars and sometimes multiple cameras in cars, companies like Valeo are looking at ways to sort of leverage that technology by kind of adding value and adding more intelligence to the car, particularly with a view to safety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we're doing in NUI Galway is we've got a range of projects, many of which are sponsored by Valeo, and we're developing technologies which will essentially add intelligence to the cameras, particularly by processing the video streams that are coming from the cameras and trying to extract information that would help the driver, particularly from a safety point of view. I suppose one good example of that would be pedestrian detection.
Okay, how would that work?
So in essence, if you're driving along, we'll say, in a city, it's obviously a very complex environment. You've got a lot of other cars, you've got bicycles, and you've got a lot of pedestrians. So it's often the case that pedestrians will simply walk out in front of a car without looking. So a pedestrian detection system which uses a camera would essentially process the video feed that's coming from the camera in real time and would attempt, using fairly sophisticated image processing algorithms, to detect the presence of a pedestrian. And would then typically sound a warning or maybe flash something on the screen that the driver sees within the car. So the objective really is to give the driver an early warning of the presence of the pedestrian.
And if it was something that was very sudden, like sometimes people come, they can just step out, could you have, say, a brake that would kick in, or would that be a bit too dangerous for the driver?
No, absolutely, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are systems that are being developed which will actually automatically apply the brakes in certain circumstances. You know, in that scenario that you've just mentioned where somebody steps out suddenly and an instant reaction has to be taken. So there are systems that are being deployed that will actually do that for you.
Okay. Now, is all of this to do with driving a car on good roads, or let's say a country road in Ireland where a lot of the bad accidents and fatal accidents happen? I mean, how could these systems help with that kind of driving?
Yeah, the systems really should be fairly robust. I mean, to get widespread acceptance, systems like this need to be very, very robust and should be able to work in all sorts of conditions, not just in terms of road quality, but also in terms of weather conditions and also at night. So, for example, if you take the night scenario, which is obviously a very, very important one from the point of view of pedestrians, because people frequently go walking at night, they're not properly lit up and so on. We've been working on a project in collaboration with Valeo, looking at the use of night vision technology using infrared cameras to attempt to more reliably detect pedestrians at night. So again, it's based on the use of infrared. So most pedestrians will generally emit some sort of heat, which can be picked up by the camera. Whereas the intelligence, I suppose, generally comes in what you do with that picture in terms of processing and extracting information and then making a decision on the basis of that information.
Okay, and what about on a busy road, again, in Galway or Dublin, where cars are coming maybe too close together? Could you have sensors that would say, you know, beep if you're kind of getting too close to the car in front or to the one at the side or whatever?
Yeah, well, you can, yeah. I mean, again, things like collision avoidance would be starting to become fairly commonly deployed now, in the sense that a variety of sensors can be used, such as, I mean, currently radar and sonar are very commonly used. Now, what we're particularly interested in, and companies like Valeo that are involved with cameras, is using cameras for the same purpose. I suppose the one of the drivers for that really is that if you're going to have cameras in your vehicle, why not use them for as many functions as possible, and therefore you can reduce the number of sensors that you've got and hopefully make the system design a little simpler. So we're looking at using cameras for the same purpose. But in essence, yes, I mean, you're absolutely right. There are systems there which will detect when you get too close to a car and which will either automatically apply the brakes or will warn the driver again that you're getting too close and there's a danger of collision.
Okay, and down the road, if we look into the future, I mean, I'm sure you look at trends and how things are going to develop, say, in the next 5, 10, 15 years, whatever. Do you think that we're moving eventually towards the driverless car? Or?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I suppose if you look maybe at the medium term, there's certainly a drive towards developing systems that will provide greater, I suppose, what you might call situational awareness for the driver and for the vehicle. And that will involve the use of cameras, multiple cameras, maybe other sensors, all trying to build up a very accurate picture of the environment around the vehicle. So greater levels of intelligence, many more systems in the car communicating with each other, fusion of sensor information with the objective of telling the driver, there may be something in the immediate vicinity of the car, but equally there may be something further down the line. I think pushing beyond that a little bit more, you will certainly start to see greater cooperation between vehicles in the sense of, transmission of information between vehicles, using the internet for things like traffic reports, accident reports, and that's already quite common.
Right, okay.
In terms of the driverless car, yeah, I mean, certainly it's something that's kind of beloved of science fiction.
Yeah, sure.
I think certainly the technology is capable ultimately of supporting that.
Yeah.
In the sense that, the systems that are being developed today are certainly a very, very important step towards that. But I suppose in terms of widespread deployment of driverless vehicles, it'll be some time before that comes in, I suppose for a number of reasons. I think there are definitely benefits to that. And I think ironically, a system like that would work very, very well if every vehicle on the road was driverless, because then there's an element of predictability about them.
Right.
So I think ultimately that may well happen, it's kind of hard to say how many years down the road. I suppose another interesting question is sort of a cultural one, in the sense that I suppose for a lot of people, there's driving the car can be a kind of a pleasant experience.
Yes, exactly.
Some people may prefer, I suppose if you're lucky enough to own a Ferrari or a Lamborghini, you might like to drive that yourself rather than let the car do the driving for you.
Yeah.
But certainly there is interest in the concept of autonomous vehicles, again with the goal of reducing the load on the driver and enhancing safety, and certainly the technology is heading in that direction.
Like maybe say for long distance truckers or something, that you'd have a system there in place and they could override it, whereas otherwise if something happened, if they fell asleep at the wheel, then
I mean absolutely, and I suppose a waypoint to that would be if you consider, we'll say, where you've got a motorway, and particularly we'll say in the US and elsewhere where you've got long straight stretches of motorway, you could have a sort of a follow the leader scenario where you've got cars cooperating with each other. One of them is essentially the leader, and the others are following that leader autonomously. So, I mean, even things like cruise control now would be a sort of a kind of a basic example of that type of technology. But just to, you raised an interesting point there in terms of driver fatigue, which is another very important area. And there are systems being developed which will monitor the driver, you know, whether they're trying to detect if the driver is getting drowsy through perhaps the eyes are starting to close, monitoring heartbeat and things like that, again, with the goal of sounding a warning or telling the driver, you're tired, pull over and rest for a while, and so on.
Yeah, because you do hear anecdotal, you hear stories about truckers being pushed to get from A to B very, very quickly, and they might be tired and they push it too far, maybe.
Of course, yeah.
So before we actually see a lot of these becoming standard, is this some way off yet?
I don't think so. I mean, even today now, I mean, as I say, things like cameras, you know, driven by the activities of companies like Valeo and other companies, cameras are starting to become very, very common. Even pedestrian, things like pedestrian detection systems by day and by night, they're also being deployed. What generally happens, I suppose, is that this technology will appear in high-end vehicles. So, for example, BMW 7 Series has night vision with pedestrian detection. But over time, that technology will become more widely deployed in what you might call maybe mainstream and low-end cars as well. But even today, multiple cameras are being deployed in a wide range of vehicles and not just the high-end stuff. So there's definitely a trend. It's going to come, I think, faster than we think.
And can you tell me just finally then on the traffic thing, is this, you know, one vehicle can tell another vehicle, listen, there's trouble up ahead, go a different way, or how does that work?
Well, if you consider, I mean, at the moment, I suppose there's increasing use. I mean, everybody's got a smartphone.
Yeah.
And smartphones have internet access. So there are moves, we'll say, among car manufacturers to try and, again, exploit that technology. That infrastructure is there, so it makes sense to try and make use of it to provide some sort of added value, new applications in the vehicle. So there is a lot of work going on in terms of integrating smartphones into the vehicle system.
Mm-hmm.
So at the vehicle can... smartphone can provide internet connectivity. So it would be possible, for example, if you kind of project out a little bit, suppose you have cameras on a vehicle.
Yeah.
The camera would obviously be keeping tabs on what's going on in the environment. A car might drive past an accident, or it might drive past, we'll say, a traffic congestion black spot.
Mm-hmm.
That information could be extracted automatically by an intelligent system, and it could be transmitted perhaps via the internet to some sort of a central repository from which it could be made available to other vehicles.
Or to emergency services,
or
I'm thinking as well. Yeah,
I mean, that's another good point.
Another route.
Exactly, yeah, because there are systems being deployed which will automatically notify the emergency services if a car is actually involved in an accident.
Okay.
Where, again, every second counts.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for telling us all about that. It sounds great, and congratulations on getting that agreement signed with that Valeo Systems.
Well, it is very, very positive for us within the university, and obviously Valeo is an excellent example of a high-tech company with a very large-scale R&D operation operating in the west of Ireland.
Yeah.
So it's been a very, very good relationship for us.
And it could be something that will bring jobs to the west as well, that technology is there in NUI Galway?
Absolutely. I mean, Valeo themselves are actually in the process of recruiting a large number of engineers at a very high level, from degree through to master's through to PhD, and they're involved in a very extensive recruitment campaign at the moment. So it's all very, very positive. It's a large organization in Tuam, and it's growing very, very well. So it's very, very positive for the West. And it's obviously very good for the university, because it adds relevance to our research and our students. Our researchers it keeps it real for them, because they're working on real problems that are of relevance to industry.
And it shows the importance of science and engineering in the real world.
It certainly does. And I suppose it's a very good example of the value of investment in university research. I mean, we're working on technology that is of direct benefit to Valeo, and we're also producing graduates at bachelor's, master's and PhD level that are already being employed by Valeo.
Okay.
So it's very, very positive.
Okay, Edward. Thanks very much for coming on. Maybe we'll have you again at some point in the future.
Okay. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks a lot. That was Edward Jones. He's with the Car Research Group at NUI Galway. He was telling us about some of their work towards developing safer vehicles, maybe even driverless vehicles into the future at some point. Now, just while we're keying up our next guest, of course, it's the 50th anniversary of a major event that happened in space. people that were around at the time will remember that the first man into space was Yuri Gagarin. It had a huge impact on that particular generation. That was 1961, along with Sputnik, which was the first satellite to go up into space. I think it kind of inspired a particular generation to go into science. It was all very exciting at the time. He sadly died, actually, at the age of 34. He was a test pilot. He was actually grew up in his early childhood as he grew up. In his early childhood, he grew up in a situation where the Germans had occupied his part of the Soviet Union. The family actually had to live in a small mud hut where they spent a year and 9 months until the end of the occupation. And his two siblings were deported to Nazi Germany for slave labour, didn't come back until the end of the war, so he certainly didn't have it easy. Became famous, of course, when he went up on a single orbit of the Earth on the 12th of April 1961, became a celebrity, of course, for the rest of his life. He became a hero of the Soviet Union, which was a huge deal at the time. But sadly, in 1968, he died when he was test flying a MiG jet, which they're still around, of course, these MiG jets, these Soviet jets that he was piloting. It crashed. So, and just to mention, there's actually an event on in DCU tonight. There's a Russian cosmonaut speaking at DCU in the Helix tonight. You can look that up online at DCU.ie. I think it may be booked out, but it starts at 7:30 anyway for those that are interested. Okay, now we're going to move on and we're going to talk about Irish mammals and a new Atlas of Irish Mammals survey that has been launched. And I have on the line now to talk about it, I've Liam Lycett. He's the director of the National Biodiversity Data Centre. And welcome to the programme, Liam.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
Thanks for taking the call. So, Liam, maybe tell us about the Atlas and what's the purpose, firstly, of having this Atlas of Irish Mammals?
Well, I suppose the primary objective is that the data centre here, we're interested in establishing baselines and trying to have systems in place where we can track changes in biodiversity. And one of the groups that is appealing to people, and we feel that, you know, people are actually interested in and could contribute quite a lot of very good quality data, are the whole area of mammals.
Mm.
And we've been working closely with other NGOs and national parks and wildlife who are looking after some aspects of mammal conservation. And, for example, the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group have a very good data management system for whales and dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
The Bat Conservation Ireland have a very good system in place for tracking bats. But a lot of the species then fall between the cracks, like the poor old hedgehog, some of the bank vole, for example. There's no one there who's actually taking these species seriously, let's say, or the collecting data. So we thought it was an ideal opportunity for us to play a coordinating role, bring all the Irish mammalogists together, mm-hmm. in the organisation, and say, listen, can we do a map of an atlas of both the land and the marine mammals in Ireland? It's so kind of a flagship project, really, you know.
Okay, so you want the public involved in this?
Yeah, well, it is one of the groups of biodiversity that people encounter in their travels,
mm-hmm.
and they're interested. And up till now, there really hasn't been any place where people could send their observations to a centralized database where that data would actually become high quality and could tell us a lot about, you know, the quality of our environment out there.
So do you literally want people, if they see a hedgehog in a particular place, to tell you, to note the time, or how do they go about it?
It's as simple as that. What we're really trying to do, it's a five-year project running to 2015, mm. where we want to try to map the distribution of mammals in Ireland during that period. So what we're really interested in is distribution of these creatures.
Where they live, basically.
Where they live, yeah. Mm. So we're asking what constitutes a valid. There's four pieces of information which constitutes a valid, what we call, biological record. One is, what species have you seen? Where have you seen it? So a location.
Mm-hmm.
When did you see it? A date. And then who saw the record? So the name of the observer. Those four pieces of information will ensure that you have a valid record, which is a scientific piece of information.
And just for those who'd like to contribute, I mean, how specific do you have to be on where you found it?
It doesn't really matter. Townland would be ideal.
Mm.
And we The online mapping facility or the online record submission facility has, if you see the area, you can actually generate a grid reference for that site. So,
okay.
Townland would be the key piece of information that we require, because that's a nice size unit of land that's, you know, on a national scale is very important.
And when you have your info, what do you do then? Do you go online, or what's the procedure?
Yeah, we have an Atlas of Irish Mammals website where it shows you, for each species recorded in Ireland, it shows you some information about its legal status. There's a species profile for some of the animals, and there's a distribution map showing the records that we have, historic records that exist for those species. So prior to 2010, there's a map showing where we know they've occurred. And we're asking people to submit a record so that we can fill another map from 2010 to 2015
okay.
to show the current distribution. So there's an online submission form which asks for these pieces of information, and you just have to click the button and the record is submitted to us.
Now, I think I've got the website here. Correct me if it's not right, but I've got mammals.biodiversityireland.ie. Is that
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so anybody, mammals.biodiversityireland.ie. So I'd imagine you would get interest from, obviously, amateur enthusiasts as well as scientists, and maybe schools and local groups as well.
Well, that's it. I mean, potentially it's set up for anyone. It's the first, there's a framework in place now where people can submit the data online. You can do it remotely from your own house. So anyone who sees sees a mammal, we would certainly welcome that observation.
Okay.
We're putting focus on some of the more conspicuous mammals, which we expect people, you know, the general public to submit, like if they see a fox or a badger or a hedgehog,
yeah.
or a squirrel, in fact. But then we probably depend on people with a bit more specialist knowledge to separate, for example, a house mouse from a field mouse or a bank vole. So, you know, we have different levels, but anyone can participate. And even if you see a feral goat on the hillside someplace, we would be delighted to see it.
Great
to get
stuff.
The record of that.
You know? What are the poor relations then that, you know, you mightn't have that much information on?
Well, it's quite interesting. Hedgehog is one of the species that we don't know much about. We assume that it's widespread, but in fact there's no data there. Irish stoat, it's a species that's a subspecies that's relevant and important in Ireland, and actually it's a very elusive creature. There's very poor data out there.
They live near rivers generally, do they? Or
well, woodland primarily, yeah, but they're very nocturnal. They're probably one of the shyest species. So anyone, if they see these records, like, they may not appreciate the importance of documenting them and let us know about it, because every single valid record will make a very big difference to us. You
because
know?
If you start this, of course, we talked about this before when you were on before, but Ireland isn't blessed with a great amount of precise data on our animal and plant species going back over the decades.
Well, there's certainly gaps, there's no doubt about it.
Compared to the UK, say.
Well, that's true. That's exactly true. And I mean, what we've done, we've applied modern information and communications technology to actually make this information available. I mean, one of the sides, there's two sides to the equation. One is about receiving data so that we have it. But of course, the other side of the equation is feeding it back out to people so that they can actually see what's living in their locality or what we know about in their locality.
Hmm.
So we have developed an online GIS mapping system so that the information is freely available. It's all about sharing information and adding. We call it citizen science. It's really anyone who makes observations, that those observations are important.
Because I'm thinking as an ex-biology teacher in a school, this would be a great project because people are always interested in their local areas.
Well, that's it, yeah. And I mean, mammals is the one thing that perhaps schools might find it difficult enough to see mammals, but there's certainly material there and it's a way of engaging. And again, it's making relevant to people. This is the key thing. If you're out there, people have a real interest in their surroundings. And they can contribute information and they can actually see the knowledge of their area kind of developing over the years.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on and telling us about that. And we'll follow it as it develops. And good luck with your work down there at the data centre. And again, that's Dr. Liam Lysett. He was telling us about a new initiative to collect information, he'd like the public involved too, on sightings of Irish mammals. If you'd like to do that, there's a website. It's mammals.biodiversityireland.ie. Thanks very much, Liam. Now, we've just come to the end of another show, and thanks again for listening. I'd just like to draw your attention, if you're interested in checking out some previous podcasts, I've now moved location at the new website where you can actually get all of those podcasts and some other of my work, my print work as well, is seanduke.com. So that's easy enough to remember. It's seanduke.com. I think there's now something 63, 64 shows up. They're all searchable. So if you have a particular interest in a particular science or somebody that you, a name, you can put it into the search engine and hopefully it'll come up. So thanks again for listening and talk to you next week. Bye-bye for now.